You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
Yeah, welcome to the Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone number is 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Our text message, if you prefer to send us your opinion that way, is 484-650-3373, and our email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. You can catch us on Twitter and Facebook, can they not, Sean?
That's right, Bill. You could follow us on Twitter at feedbackweeu and also on Facebook at feedbackweeu.
And they can catch us on a podcast if they miss part or all of the show, can't they?
Yes, we're on podcast wherever those might be available to you, the big ones, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts. But you could also go to our website, 830weeu.com. On the top, you could click podcast. You could, if you click that, you'll find our show, Feedback for Bill's Honors, as well as Mornings with Mike, Jack's Backyard, and our sports catalog from this past high school basketball season.
Mm-hmm.
But if we say we had a big interview, like we had Dr. Timothy Blessing on last Friday,
right?
If you just want to listen to our conversation with Dr. Blessing,
okay,
you can go to on that same tab, you click program, click feedback, and then you can scroll down and you'll see all the interviews so far. We have 3 interviews up there so far, I believe.
Okay, all right, something like that.
Yep, and you just click that, and that's the entire interview if you don't want to listen to the entire show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. So much information and so little time to get it all in. You did a great job. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate that. And let's take a look at today's top 3 topics. Why not? If I can get that in front of me, here we go. They include the deadline for Donald Trump is today to put up that multi-million dollar bond in connection with his New York civil fraud case or have his property taken from him. Colorado Congressman Ken Buck is the latest Republican to retire from Congress. We'll share his views on his colleagues. And President Biden is now claiming his EV mandate, or other known as ban on gas-powered vehicles, is the result of consumer choice. And coming up at 11 o'clock today, I'll be joined by some folks from the Council on Chemical Abuse for a discussion on teens and technology and how social media can lead to risky behavior for young people. Stay tuned for that, okay? Also, by the way, speaking of staying tuned, let's talk briefly about what's coming up this week. Tomorrow, during the 11 o'clock hour, I'll be joined by Republican State Senator Tracy Penicuik, who represents Senate District 24, which covers parts of Berks and Montgomery County. She'll be with me for a half hour tomorrow morning from 11 to 11:30. Jay Worrell of Helping Harvest will be here on Thursday during the 11 o'clock hour. And on Friday, Berks County Commissioner Chairman Christian Leinbach will be here. That'll be during the 10 o'clock hour. So that's some of the things that'll be happening this week here on Feedback. All right, let's start off with the deadline is come and gone for Donald Trump to post bond on that New York civil fraud case that he's facing. This I got from USA Today. And we're talking about more than $450 million is what he's got to come up with in order to post bond. And the New York Attorney General's office did not respond to USA Today's request for comment on whether Trump had until the end of yesterday or the end of today before her office may start collecting. Of course, I'm talking about Letitia James, who is the attorney general there in New York. The total amount right now is $454 million. That's the judgment against Trump. It was entered back on February 23rd, and the 30-day window for Trump to post the appeal bond or place cash with the New York court would expire today unless extended to fall on a, or extended it expired rather yesterday, but it was extended because it fell on a weekend. Either way, New York Attorney General Letitia James could move the freeze up Trump's assets or seize his property very soon. Now, there might be some problems here, and we're going to talk about that in just a bit. But here's what a New York litigator and former federal prosecutor told USA Today. I'm talking about Mitchell Eppner now. He's quoted in this piece as saying, if there are bank accounts in New York, those can be frozen essentially immediately if Letitia James already knows where they are, and the turnover of the funds in a bank account would be measured in days or weeks. Well, the purpose of requiring a bond or deposit to cover a judgment during an appeal is to make sure the money is there to collect when the appeal is over. If James collected $454 million from Trump now, and he won his appeal, he would be entitled to get the money back. But that doesn't necessarily mean he'd be made whole if his property were sold as part of the process. There's no guarantee he could buy it back for the same price. The $454 million judgment is a combination of interest and the money that Judge Arthur Angeron determined that Trump got in better loan, and insurance terms by fraudulently inflating the value of his assets over several years. Angeron told Trump and several business entities, including the Trump Organization, on the hook for that judgment. He also imposed judgments totaling about $10 million against Trump's two oldest sons, Don Jr. and Eric, and former Trump Organization Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg. Lawyers for Trump and the two sons told a New York appeals court last week that getting a $464 million bond to cover their judgments was a practical impossibility. They said in the court filing that 30 bond companies had refused to provide a bond that large if the Trumps offered collateral that included real estate as opposed to collateral that is strictly cash or cash equivalents. A lawyer from James's office told the court in a Wednesday filing that the Trump complaints were based on the false premise that one bonding company needed to supply the entire bond rather than multiple companies spreading the risk. The lawyer also said the Trumps hadn't provided documentary evidence about the terms they offered to bonding companies and should at least have offered real estate for the court system to hold on to during the appeal. In addition to quickly moving on bank funds, Letitia James could seize Trump's real estate, although that process takes longer, and Trump would have added protections for a personal New York residence. When it comes to property within New York County, where Manhattan is and where the judgment was entered, the judgment becomes a lien on Trump's real estate immediately. For New York property outside that county, James would need to take further actions to get the lien applied, and it looks like she may have already done that because she notified New York's Westchester County, which includes Trump's Seven Springs estate and the Trump National Golf Club, the judgment back on March 6th. James could also go after Trump property in other states through a process known as domesticating the judgment in that other state. She would then be bound by that state's collection rules, however. Well, pollster Frank Luntz, he is a Republican. He recently warned that New York Attorney General Letitia James's efforts to seize former President Trump's properties could devastate Democrats in the upcoming election. We've got some sound here on that. Well, he appeared on a Friday night appearance on CNN, and during that appearance, Luntz asserted that any efforts to seize Trump's assets will destroy Biden's chances of being reelected in November. Here's Frank Luntz on CNN.
I want you to remember this moment, and don't forget it. If the New York Attorney General starts to take his homes away, starts to seize his assets, it's all going to be on camera. Pundits are going to sit there and scream about this. This man cannot be elected. You're going to create the greatest victimhood of 2024, and you're going to elect Donald Trump. If they take his stuff, he's going to say that this is proof that the federal government and the establishment and the swamp in Washington and all the politicians across the country and the attorneys generals and all of this, that this is a conspiracy to deny him the presidency. He's going to go up in the polls just like he went up every single time they indicted him. The indictment, let's not talk about whether it's justified or not, but it will prove the things that he's saying on the campaign trail, and he will go up, and it may just elect him president. Do not forget that. And I say this to the Attorney General right now. If you play politics on this, this is what the Secretaries of State did in Colorado and what they did in, I believe, is Maine. His numbers went up in both states. I don't understand. I'm almost speechless in how pathetic the opposition to Trump has been and how completely misguided. And this is a perfect example of it.
That's Frank Luntz on CNN. What do you think? Do you think he's right? Well, then there's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She obviously had to weigh in on the seizing of Trump's properties. I got this from the Washington Times. AOC advocated yesterday for the seizure of Trump's assets to pay for that civil fraud ruling against him. Here's what she said on CNN's State of the Union. I'm quoting directly now. So try and follow along with me on this, because to me, it was convoluted and it took me a little while to understand what she was saying. And I was reading it for Pete's sake. But let me quote her directly here. What we are dealing with politically is the much larger and much more grave and serious pressure of having this judgment against Donald Trump and him being in this degree of debt and the financial pressures that he is under and what he is subject to do in order to obtain those assets. What? Those were her exact words on CNN. Let me repeat that so that maybe you'll get a better understanding if I read it a second time. What we are dealing with politically is the much larger and much more grave and serious pressure of having this judgment against Donald Trump and him being in this degree of debt and the financial pressures that he is under and what he is subject to do in order to obtain those assets. Again, I say, what? She added the following, I actually think that there is a risk in not seizing these assets and the open window that exists in him trying to secure these funds through other means. All right, I got part of what she said in that second paragraph there. If this seizure of assets would be pursued to any other American, she said, then Donald Trump should be treated the same. Now, let me repeat that part of Ms. AOC's comment on CNN. If that seizure of assets would be pursued to any other American, then Donald Trump should be treated the same. Well, guess what, Ms. AOC? No one else has been found guilty of a crime in which no one was hurt and everyone profited. Only Donald Trump. So I'm sorry, but this type of seizure of assets would not be pursued against any other American, has not been pursued against any other American but Donald Trump. And I welcome anybody to tell me who was hurt in this case. The banks got their money back. The banks got interest for the money that they lent to Donald Trump. So who was hurt in this case? The only one who's hurt in this case is turning out to be Donald Trump. Now, I'm saying it not because I'm a Trump supporter, and I know some of you are thinking, yeah, right, Bill. No, I'm saying it because that's the fact. The only person who's being hurt in this case is Donald Trump. He's the one who runs the risk of losing $454 million in cash or his valued properties. And if Letitia James seizes those properties and quickly sells them, and he wins his appeal, he's not going to get those properties back. And he'll get his money back, but he won't get his properties back. And even if he tries to buy them back, he won't be able to buy them back at the value that they are or what they're valued at today, for sure. All right, with that, we'll take a break. Love to hear from you on this. 610-374-8800, toll free, 888-401-0459, or you can text us your opinion at 484-650-3373, and we'll be back with more of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, in just a bit.
News you can use.
I feel
feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square on the voice of Berks and Beyond. News Talk 830 WEEU, where your opinions are welcome here at 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459, or you can text us your opinion at 484-650-3373. Let's go to the phones right now. Irene in Burnville wants to weigh in on this situation with Donald Trump today. Irene, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. I was just curious, why wouldn't that be considered, because I know, like, what, in the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, it says about, like, cruel and unusual punishment or usury fines or, you know, what, or bail or anything can't be set. And you would think that would fall into that area.
Can't answer the question. I'm not a lawyer.
I'm not either, but I was just, you know, I thought that was in there, and I looked, and it's like, you would think that would actually fall into that realm. And it's not fair that he can't appeal until he posts that bond.
Well, normally, somebody is only found guilty if another party has been injured in some way by that person's actions.
Right.
And in this case, no one was injured. Everyone profited.
And then I also heard that his property in Mar-a-Lago is, like, the what they're valuing it at, the court, is like $27 million or something. It's, and I may be wrong on that amount, but they said in you can't even buy a small mansion down there for that amount.
Yeah, Trump is claiming that that amount is a lot less, far less, than what the fair market value would be.
Yeah, you know, because I heard, like, other, you know, not just Trump, but other people also were saying, you know, I thought that's what they, you know, I don't think they were getting it from Trump. I think they were saying the market itself. So who knows?
Well, again, I think this goes back to what Frank Luntz was saying, the pollster on CNN, is that this is clearly political. And they're out to get Donald Trump no matter what. And what Frank is saying here, you know, if they go through with this, he feels certain that the Democrats are going to hurt more than Donald Trump and the Republicans come November.
I know a few people that actually went out and registered to vote that never registered before in their life to vote for Trump.
Really?
Because it's like, yeah, he has more money than probably most of us will never see in a lifetime. But, you know, it's just, he comes across as more down-to-earth guy. You know, that he know, you know, I know he doesn't know what normal people go through. But, you know, he earned the money, most of it. I know he inherited a lot or whatever. But still, he actually built buildings and everything else. And it's going to, I just got a feeling, it gets me mad.
Well, there are going to be people who say, especially with his project, I believe, in Atlantic City.
It went bankrupt.
Where he left a lot of people who he owed money to. He left them in the lurch as a result of that. And I don't know the background of all of that.
I don't either.
So he's not totally blameless here in some of the things that he's done. But name me one businessman that hasn't in some way, shape, or form did such a thing to, you know, kept people without paying them for what they were owed, you know. And I'm not saying every business person is that way, but there are some who do that. But they're not facing these huge judgments like Trump is today.
Right. And her just saying ahead of time that, you know, she ran on that she was going to get Trump. That just in itself seems like that should be, you know, wrong. And then the judge saying, well, he's guilty even before hearing a word of testimony. I'm just like, it just makes me even want to back him more.
Yeah, and you're not alone. No doubt about it, Irene.
You know, it's just like, if they can do it to him, can they do it to anybody?
Right, absolutely. All right, well, thanks for weighing in today. I appreciate your intake on that.
Okay.
Your opinion on this matter today. Thanks for calling.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. And then there is Ken Buck. There are things that Ken Buck has said that I agree with here. Who is Ken Buck, you might be asking? He is the former congressman who represented Colorado, a Republican, until he retired on Friday. And according to the Washington Examiner, Buck showed no remorse for leaving the House, even as his Republican Party faces an even slighter majority in the chamber. Buck appeared on ABC's This Week yesterday in his first television interview since his retirement on Friday. He expressed his disagreement with some of the priorities his fellow GOP members were pursuing at the time he left, including Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, filing a motion to vacate Speaker of the House Mike Johnson on his last day, which, again, when are they going to call it quits with this nonsense? I mean, they're in charge of the House, but if this is in charge, I'd hate to see what chaos is. But here's a clip from yesterday's interview on ABC that Ken Buck was featured in.
Congressman, let me start with you.
Sure.
You left Congress as of Friday, just as that was all going down. I guess that didn't cause you to rethink your decision?
Not at all. Not at all. No rearview mirror. Happy to move on. Dysfunctional place.
I mean, you must have been pretty intensely frustrated to not only not run again, but to leave early. And you're not alone, obviously. Mike Gallagher just said he's leaving, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, since this Congress started, there have been efforts to impeach the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the President, the Attorney General, the FBI Director. And in fact, did impeach the director of Secretary of Homeland Security. Serious problems with setting priorities. We have a very tragic circumstance in Ukraine. We have a spiraling debt. All kinds of out of control problems, and we focus on messaging bills that get us nowhere.
And I agree wholeheartedly with Ken Buck on that. He downplayed the effect his retirement will have on the Republicans' majority in the House. In his opinion, and I quote now, there's very few votes that are decided by one or two members. He stood his ground and said he was happy to move on from this dysfunctional place known as Congress. So other than the Mayorkas impeachment, he said, I can't think of a vote that went one way or the other because of one member, Buck explained. They have to be bipartisan at this point. Well, a special election to replace Buck will occur in June. And with that said, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more of this Monday edition of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square, here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. My name is Bill Saunders. I'm with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And we're so happy that you're on your end of the radio or the internet, whatever the case might be. And we'd love to hear from you on the topics of the day, including this. Now, we all know that the Democrats say that January 6, 2021 was definitely an insurrection. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But one Democrat in particular says that that rush to the border last week by well over 100 immigrants, where they overtook some National Guard troops down there in Texas, was not an invasion. Ask Senator Tim Kaine, a Democrat from Virginia. That's what he'll tell you. He said that yesterday, actually. He said the U.S. has an immigration crisis, but he suggested it is dangerous to label it as anything else, including the more than 100 migrants who last week knocked over Texas National Guard troops after breaking through razor wire. Here's what he said on Fox News Sunday yesterday. Kane, this is. I don't think it's an invasion. It's an immigration crisis. It's a national security issue. He said, I think you got to be careful throwing around words like invasion. It was that kind of wording that led the deranged guy to go shoot up the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, killing folks a couple years ago. I think that kind of rhetoric is irresponsible. I'll say that to Chuck Schumer, your boss, who said some things on the steps of the Supreme Court that led to a deranged person going to the home of one of the Supreme Court judges, Judge Kavanaugh, in fact. But I digress. In a chaotic scene emblematic of the surge of illegal immigration at the southern border, Texas National Guard troops were seen in video being overpowered by migrants who trampled razor wire and pushed past the troops. And Senator Kane says that is not an invasion. Kane blamed the border crisis on Senate Republicans, go figure, for turning against bipartisan border security provisions that one of their members negotiated with Democrats earlier this year. Well, now, wait a minute. We've had this immigration surge of immigrants coming into this country by the thousands, by the hundreds of thousands, since Mr. Biden took office in January of 2021. So how is this the result of Senate Republicans turning down this provision that they talked about this year? I'm scratching my head on that. Kane is urging President Biden to also take executive action, particularly to stem the flow of fentanyl. He said, after we basically had a deal, Donald Trump said, don't vote for this deal. We'd rather complain about this for the next 9 months than fix the problem, Mr. Kane said. Sounds like abortion. There's a problem that goes nowhere in Congress, yet they love to complain about it during election time. Let's talk about Social Security and Medicare, two problems that we're constantly being told that it's going to run out of money if something isn't done, and nothing ever does get done, does it? What's your take on what Senator Kane had to say? Love to hear from you. Oh, and then here's the latest from the president and his EV mandate. Where now the message is it's consumer choice, not a mandate. It's not a gas-powered vehicle ban, but consumer choice now. Got this from the Washington Examiner. In fact, it's an op-ed piece written by the editorial board of that paper. The headline of it reads, "The Biden Plan to Ban Gas Cars." And here's what the Examiner's editorial board had to write. President Joe Biden knows that most people don't want the sale of new gas-powered cars and trucks banned. That's why his administration tried ludicrously to spin the new tailpipe emissions rule as an expansion of consumer choice. This technology-neutral and performance-based standard gives the auto industry the flexibility to choose the combination of pollution control technologies best suited for their customers, so said Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan last week. He went on to say, let me be clear, whether it's battery electric, plug-in hybrid, advanced hybrid, or cleaner gasoline vehicles, we understand that, quote, consumer choice is paramount. Get that now? We chose this. Regan's entire statement is false, writes the Examiner's editorial board. The EPA regulation is designed to limit what type of cars and trucks we may buy. The rule limits carbon tailpipe emissions to levels so low that they can only be achieved by having 67% of cars and trucks sold be electric vehicles. Car companies that build too many gasoline vehicles will face billions of dollars in fines. Now, if that isn't a ban, I don't know what is. The EPA's message to manufacturers is clear. You must stop building gasoline cars or we will put you out of business. Those aren't my words. That's the Washington Examiner's editorial board speaking. When Biden unveiled his electric vehicle mandate last year, the phase-out of gasoline cars was more aggressive, with 60% of all cars sold set to be electric by 2030 and 67% by 2032. But auto unions balked at these numbers as unrealistic. Biden, who is union-friendly, has therefore slowed the implementation of the final rule while keeping the final target. Manufacturers now must have only half their fleets electric by 2030, with a sudden jump to 67% only 2 years later. Electric vehicles have grown from 3% of all sales in 2021 to 8% last year, goosed by $7,500 in federal tax credits. Yeah, yours and my money coming back to us to entice us to buy these vehicles that so far the only people who have been enticed to do so are the rich people, those who can afford these very expensive EVs. But sales have slowed again as drivers have discovered that battery-powered cars are unreliable and inconvenient, writes the Washington Examiner. Battery range can be cut in half by cold weather or heavy loads. That doesn't even touch the fact that electric vehicle charging stations are few and far between. Even when they are available, many don't work, writes the Examiner. As more drivers experience electric vehicles, they like the ban on gas-powered vehicles less. In 2021, just 51% of adults opposed phasing out gas-powered vehicles, according to Pew. Today, that's up to 59%. Excuse the tautology of drivers who want to be able to buy the cars they want to buy. By back-ending the phase-out of gas-powered vehicles, Biden is trying to postpone the pain. But that increases uncertainty in the industry. If it becomes clearer 2 years from now that even the EPA's new, more lenient schedule is unrealistic, will Biden push it back again? Will he abandon his campaign promise that half of all cars sold will be electric by 2030? At some point, as the technology fails him, Biden has to admit reality, right? Or maybe he doesn't. Even if Biden wins this year, he'll be out of office by the time the strictest EPA regulations hit. That's the next guy's problem. But it's also everybody's problem, which is why if you want to keep gas-powered cars an option, Biden must be voted out of office. Again, that's the Washington Examiner's words, not mine. So that's the Examiner's editorial board with a piece titled, "The Biden Plan to Ban Gas Cars," and it appears in the Washington Examiner today. And then there's this. Again, abortion is coming before the Supreme Court, but this time in the form of an abortion pill, and there's a problem with the pill now. I got this from the Washington Times. Let me read this, and I heavily edited it because the Washington Times was a little too graphic with its wording in some of this. So I did edit it down a little bit. Elizabeth Gillette was 6 to 7 weeks pregnant when she took the abortion pill and ended up suffering complications. She went into labor and delivered the fetus in its amniotic sac, which she flushed down the toilet, leaving her shocked and upset. She's now asking the Supreme Court to step in and protect women who are not under medical supervision while taking the drug. Ms. Gillette received the medication from an abortion clinic and took it at home. Tomorrow, the justices will hear arguments over the Food and Drug Administration's changes to the distribution of mifepristone. That's the drug that's used with misoprostol to terminate a pregnancy. She said the bleeding continued for more than a month and she had an allergic reaction to an antibiotic she was given because of a lack of proper medical screening. Ms. Gillette suffers from emotional trauma and requires a service dog. "No matter how you feel about abortion, women like me exist," she said. "Women have found themselves on the bathroom floor, just like me, in pools of blood," she said. "I really hope through this process that the Supreme Court will understand that we are here and we are suffering." The FDA moved in 2021 to eliminate the number of in-person doctor visits needed to obtain the drug and to allow it to be used longer into pregnancy, from 7 weeks to 10 weeks. The change in the gestational period was adopted back in 2016. The Justice Department is closely watching the case as it appeals a lower court ruling that restricted the use of mifepristone. The legal challenge was initially brought by pro-life medical providers represented by Alliance Defending Freedom. That's a religious liberty legal group. The providers say they've seen women harmed by taking the drug. Kelly Fedorik, who is senior counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, says the FDA violated the Administrative Procedures Act when it eliminated the 3 medical appointments required for women to obtain the pill. A district court ruled that the pill should not have had FDA approval, but the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals did not go that far. Instead, the appeals panel said the drug could be dispensed, but not through the mail, as regulators had begun to allow, and only up to 7 weeks into pregnancy. Well, the justices will consider how long the pill can be prescribed during pregnancy and whether it can be mailed as federal officials have proposed. Meanwhile, the court rejected another case from the same group of pro-life doctors who asked the justices to review the pill's initial FDA approval during the Clinton administration. The drug was approved in 2000 for up to 7 weeks of pregnancy, but its administration required 3 steps: a visit with a doctor to receive mifepristone, a second visit to get the drug misoprostol, and then a follow-up to address complications. The pill has remained available during the appellate process after the Supreme Court placed the lower court ruling on hold. My, oh, my. I'm telling you, I believe the Supreme Court justices are probably wishing that the abortion issue would just go away altogether. But now that part is coming up before them. And we'll stay on top of that and see where that goes. Well, we've got much more to talk about, including NBC News' hiring of the former Republican National Committee chairwoman, Rona McDaniel, and the anger, literal anger, that caused in the newsroom, including an outburst on air by the former host of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. And we'll have that for you in a bit. We've got a sound clip of what he said this weekend on air about his network. I don't know if he's upset because of the hiring of Rona McDaniel or he's upset that he lost his job hosting Meet the Press. But either way, we'll have that and much more, including the latest from Fani Willis and what she says. She says the train is coming, in reference to the election interference case down there in Georgia and Donald Trump and the 18 co-defendants. A lot to talk about and a little time to do it in today as feedback continues on this Monday. Stay with us.
Serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
Well, right now we've got sunshine and 38 degrees here in downtown Reading. Got an interesting email from Mike in Bowmansville that reads like this. I'll read this going into the commercial break, the news break, rather. My personal observations for my lifetime are the more conservative our government becomes, the freer as a people we are. The more liberal our government becomes, the less free we are. Conservatives believe we can make decisions and handle our own lives, whereas liberals believe we are incapable of making decisions and they need to decide what's best for us. Interesting. Mike, thank you for sharing that with us. Love to get other people's takes on that. Let us know what you think. Give us a call at 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our text message line is 484 650-3373 if you'd like to text your opinion to us today. That does it for hour number one. We'll be back with hour number two of this Monday edition of Feedback, but right now, it's news time. With Radio PA and ABC, followed by sports with our own Bob McCool. So keep it here on the voice of Berks and Beyond. News Talk 830 WEEU in Reading.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. Our phone number is here at 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line, if you prefer to text us your opinion, is 484-650-3373. And if you want us to read your text on the air, don't forget to include your name and the town you live in your text. I would appreciate that. All right, with that said, let's go to the phones. Got a couple of people who've been patiently waiting through the news break to talk with us this morning, including Jim in Stony Creek. Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
Hey, Bill. How are you this morning?
Fine. How are you doing today?
Recovering from a knee replacement. So
Ooh. Here's hoping you recover quickly, buddy.
Yeah, thanks. So, getting back to the EV situation, I mean, there's just so many things. I find that environmentalists are the biggest hypocrites in the world because on one hand, they're saying, get rid of gas-powered cars and go with EVs, but yet all the construction equipment that is required to mine all the minerals that are required for the EVs, for the batteries and the electronics, far exceed the savings, And then when it comes to the infrastructure, we don't have the infrastructure for the EVs. I mean, what are you going to do, dig up Penn Street from one end to the other to put charging stations down through there? Who's going to pay that? People that don't have EVs are going to end up paying that bill. I mean, that's my other problem. If you want an EV, hey, more power to you, buy an EV. But then don't expect me to have to help support you in either infrastructure expenses, kickbacks from the government for you to convince you to buy an EV. I mean, it's just the typical government run amok thing,
Well, this is a classic example of where a business decision is a wrong decision. If you need to entice people to buy something, then you're going against market principles. And the market principles are you build what the consumer wants, not what you want them to want. And in this case, it's a clear case where a politician is telling the auto industry what to do, and he's failing at it.
Right. The car manufacturers are soon just going to say, we'd rather take the financial hit because we'd rather sell cars than have parking lots full of cars we can't sell. Chrysler or Dodge right now is in the process of building a truck that is it's a hybrid. It's like a freight train. It uses a smaller either gas or diesel engine to power a generator that powers the electric motors, and the thing's going to have fantastic fuel mileage. Those are the things we need because those are the things that'll keep running. I just find electric vehicles are just insane because what happens if you're on a road trip and you get to where you're going and you can't charge, then you're stuck. At least with a gas or a diesel engine, you can always find gas or diesel somewhere to get back on the road. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying. And yet those who are supporting this EV effort are telling us that it's our imagination that we'll be stuck somewhere and not be able to charge up our car. Yeah, tell that to the people in Chicago when they had that real big cold snap.
Let's revert back to the Valentine's Day storm. When was that? About 8-10 years ago, when Interstate 78 was shut down for how many days? So what do you think would happen to all those cars? Because you had people running out of gas and diesel fuel, because they couldn't move. Well, at least you could throw a couple gallons of gas back in the car to to get it running again and get it off the road. But what are you going to do when you have thousands of dead cars on Interstate 78 because all the batteries are dead? What, are you going to run a bunch of extension cords out?
I love it. Jim, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today.
The whole thing is to put money in somebody's pocket. That's what it is. It all comes down to money. You know, somebody wants to be able to invest in something and make a killing, and they don't care one iota about the American public.
Now, wait a minute. Are you saying Al Gore is profiting off of his climate change messaging?
Yeah. The guy who owns how many airplanes? You know.
Well, he owns five homes, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah, he can use a big airplane to go fly to one of his climate change meetings, but then he wants to begrudge me for driving my car to the grocery store. You know.
Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Have a good day, Bill.
You too. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Leesport. Bob wants to talk about Donald Trump. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I've got a few ideas, and it doesn't have to do with what's going down today in the efforts to bankrupt him so he's ineffective as a political candidate. It has to do with something else. And I got my information from The Atlantic, October the 3rd, 2011, and then a lot of comments are my own, but here's what that article had to say. On September the 30th, 2011, President Obama gave the order to kill American citizens Anwar al-Awlaki and Samir Khan without due process of law. It proved controversial, with experts in law and war reaching different conclusions. In the end, the actual legal reasoning used to authorize the strike was a secret. It was an example of a sitting president exploiting his presidential immunity to make a controversial decision. The 16-year-old son of Anwar al-Awlaki was also killed 2 months later. Abdul al-Raham was also a citizen of the United States, but unlike his father, he had never been on a member of al-Qaeda, neither was he ever on an American kill list. He was a boy who hadn't seen his father in 2 years. He was a boy who knew his father was on an American hit list and who snuck out of his family's home on the morning of September the 4th, 2011 to try to find his father. He was a boy who was still processing his father's death when he himself was killed by a drone. So how many civil lawsuits has Obama faced for his targeted assassinations of U.S. citizens during his time in office? I believe the answer is none, because of his presidential immunity. By the way, how many U.S. citizens, and I repeat that, U.S. citizens, did President Trump order assassinated without due process of law during his years as president? I believe the answer would be none. Yet Trump is the one being called the dictator. It sounds a lot like the psychological game of projection, where people accuse others of doing the things they would like to do or have done themselves already. Trump's deranged opponents deny his pleas of presidential immunity and invent new ways to bankrupt him for the audacity of entering the political arena. No matter how much you hate Trump, he did not lead an armed insurrection against the government of the United States with the kind of bloodshed I saw in Venezuela's 1991 coup when I lived there. But that hasn't stopped Special Counsel Jack Smith from bringing those charges against Trump in a biased Washington, D.C. court, alleging that he tried to overturn the U.S. government on January the 6th. Trump has already faced these allegations during his second impeachment trial and was found not guilty by the Senate. But that isn't good enough for partisan prosecutors like Jack Smith. Trump is also facing 40 counts stemming from Smith's separate probe into the former president's retention of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. But unlike Biden, Trump is apparently competent to stand trial, thus making him more fit to be president than Biden apparently is. If the Democrats really want to go down this road of prejudicial kangaroo court games, do they think Obama or Biden will escape retribution when the political tables are turned? They will see the same kind of lawsuits in civil court that are running against Trump. This is not the way to unify a nation and move the country forward. Democrats are pursuing this strategy at their own peril, and the pendulum will swing back with a vengeance eventually. And that's the way I see it.
Wow. Well, we'll have to see if what you say is true come November.
Yeah, well, I love coming on to your show because it gives me a chance to do editorial comments without ever submitting them.
I didn't think you were going to take a breath there for a little bit.
Well, I was running out of air. Yeah, I got wound up.
Oh, my. Bob, thank you, buddy.
You have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Birdsboro and talk to Kevin this morning. Kevin, welcome to Feedback. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I got to make a quick comment, Bill. I like the text message you got from the man from Bowmansville. He's absolutely right. So if you think about everything that's going on, from First Amendment, Second Amendment, everything that's, you know, this administration is trying to shove down our throats, he's absolutely right. You know, people call in, they talk about democracy, and Donald Trump's, we're going to ruin it. I mean, just think about it. The liberals want to tell us how to live more than anybody, than conservatives. So I just want to make a comment on that. And Bob, of course, when he always calls in, I agree with him 100%. But let me tell you what I've learned recently about the electric vehicles. I don't know. I think you and I have talked about it before, but it was on last night. Did you about the nodules on the ocean floor? I think you and I discussed that. Well, China has an.
First of all, clarify what you're saying so that others will understand where you're coming from here.
The nodules on the ocean floor are full of minerals, cobalt, zinc, everything you need for batteries. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. And with this treaty, the United States has we don't have any of land, you know, ocean floor at all. I mean, I'm not saying that we should, but China apparently has so many thousands of miles and miles of that they're claiming to mine the ocean floor. And they put these big, oh, they're larger than a D8 bulldozer, Bill. And they lower them down on the ocean floor. And it just tears and sucks all the nodules up. It tears the ocean floor up. But you're not hearing much about it. I find that, you know, why? A little bit they said the Republicans are the fault because they won't vote on a treaty. So did you catch that at all?
What was aired last night, you mean?
Yeah, 60
no.
minutes.
No, I did not.
Oh, my. Right. Yeah, so I just find that, you know, there's no, where are the, you know, people trying to protect the ocean. You don't hear nothing from them about that, what's going on. And these electric vehicles, so from what I have learned through people that work for us that are firemen, they had to go to a class to put, if they get called to an accident. So it's very hard to put the fire out if there is a fire when they get in a crash. You almost need a tanker of water. And then, even if you get the fire out, because it's so hot, the fire from the batteries, you have to, when the flatbed truck comes following me to take your vehicle away, to take it to wherever it goes, to the storage facility, now you have a fire truck that has to follow that vehicle. Because they're saying 80% of the time, that fire will start back up again. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then, when you put it in the storage facility, you have to keep it separate from anything else around. You know how they just line up these smashed up cars? You can't do that with the electric vehicles. So, now you're tying up a fire truck that they might need somewhere else. It's you know, people aren't thinking about everything. The weight, like they're talking about the big trucks and all. The batteries are so heavy. And the cost, the last I heard, for a Peterbilt, that's a big rig, that's the make of a big truck,
right?
A tractor bill, mm-hmm. All right, $470,000. And it only has a 450-mile radius before you have to charge it. So that's not going to work at all for an over-the-road trucker. So maybe they might be able to use these trucks like down at the docks where all they do is jockey trailers back and forth. Are you following me?
Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. So they might, you know, like the normal company, trucking company, there's no way that you will be able to utilize these battery trucks. So for one thing, you couldn't get no weight on your truck to make money because they're so heavy. Now, I'll go with, like, maybe Manhattan or something, like, for a trash truck. I think that might be a good idea to try to use, even though the weight, still, you won't be able to get as much trash on. But I just think people aren't thinking. I just think, follow the money. Like, so many other callers are calling and saying, you follow the money. Who's making money on all this? And they're not thinking that. And then again, Bill, where's all the electric come from when you go to plug it in? What's making that electricity?
Well, in some instances, it's still coal in this country.
Right. Yeah. I talk fast and tired. You can't follow it. But, yeah, that's why I asked you. It's coal. It's really a joke. It really is. And then they want to go to school buses, you hear talk. And from what, I know.
All right, we got to wrap it up, Kevin. We have to wrap it up.
It would be astronomical, the cost and the weight for a school bus. You're talking almost $750,000 for the charger, the batteries, and everything else by the time you're done.
All right, got to go.
All right, Bill.
Kevin, yep, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Marie and Redding, I'll be with you in just a bit. Got to do a little bit of business first when feedback continues on this Monday morning. Stay with us.
I don't know why I didn't come. I left you by the house of fun. Don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Let's go back to the phones right now as the Monday edition of Feedback continues and talk with Marie in Redding. Marie, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you, too.
At least it isn't raining. I'm happy for that.
You and me both.
Yeah. I have a couple comments based upon your articles this morning and a couple callers. Number one, the email that you read from that gentleman, I can't recall his name, but he was spot on. That is the exact definition of a conservative, is living their own life and making their own decisions and being responsible for those decisions and the consequences thereof. And I believe, and this is an opinion of mine, that part of the problem in the society today, overall, I don't say everything, but overall, is the breakdown of the responsibility for your actions, because the liberal media, the liberal government, and certain other factors are making it okay to do certain things with no consequences. The family breakdown, of course. If I had done some of the things that the kids do in school today, my father would have beat me when I got home from school. You were not allowed to be disrespectful to your teachers or anyone in authority. I was taught to trust, to respect the position, if not the person, the position that person holds, which, of course, nowadays is just non-existent on both sides. I would say on both sides. But his email was spot on. I am so glad you read it, because that is the definition. And I've always stressed to my children as they were growing up, there are consequences for things that you do. So if you don't study in school, you're not going to get good grades. You're not going to get in college. If you make stupid decisions, of course your family will be there to help you out. But you ultimately are going to pay a price for doing stupid things. If you do drugs or commit crimes or whatever, fill in the blanks, there are consequences for those things.
Well, Marie, let me play devil's advocate with you for just a minute. And it was Mike in Bowmansville who sent me the email.
Mike. Yeah.
And you're in agreement with the part that he says that the more conservative our government becomes, the freer as a people we are. Well, liberals will say, wait a minute, who's the one who's trying to restrict abortions? Who's the one who's putting bans on certain books in our schools? Is that leading to us being freer?
Yes, to one of those comments, banning books that are inappropriate for young children, I totally agree with. They can go buy them. If the parents want them to read them at home, they can go buy them. But they are not going to read them in school. I know I wouldn't have wanted my children nor my grandchildren, who are all out of school, and I have no great-grandchildren yet, that I would not have wanted, nor my children, their children, to read inappropriate sexual books in elementary school. I do not agree with any of that.
But isn't that taking a freedom away from a child whose parents may not even be able to afford to buy a book? If it's free and available at the school, why couldn't they read it, even though it's not in keeping with something you think is appropriate for that child to read, but their parents do?
Well, I don't agree with that way of thinking. I don't agree with that way of thinking, and if it is that urgent for that child to have books on sex when they're in third grade, I think something is definitely wrong in Denmark somewhere. That's my opinion. That certainly does not encompass everybody in the world, and there are always exceptions to everything, Bill. No matter what kind of comment or belief you have, there's always going to be exceptions. And as far as abortion goes, my stand on abortion is it's a necessary evil with limitations. And I will always say that as a mother and a grandmother and a woman, first of all, I will always say that, because until we have a perfect world, we have to have certain things. And even other civilized democratic countries have legalized abortion with limitations. That's the part that people don't want to talk about, with limitations. That's the part. So that's my opinion on that. And then I wanted to comment on the Trump discussion that was being held. I totally agree with your caller, Irene. I also believe that Lady Liberty is supposed to be blind, and she is not supposed to be used as a political target to target people that are not agreeing with what you want them to do. And so I believe Lady Liberty has lost her blindfold, and she is staring at Donald Trump, and I believe there's a case for him about the Constitution with the unreasonable fines and other issues that are going on with these lawsuits. I think it's absolutely disgraceful the way he has been targeted. Whether he was a Democrat or Republican, everybody should be upset about this, because this opens the door to so much more, because the media claimed that Hunter Biden is being targeted because he's the president's son. Well, I think they should open that window and look out and see that Donald Trump is being targeted because he's running for president, and certain people don't want him to run for president. So I think the arrow has, you know, points on both sides. So I think there's a lot of self-examination should be going on, because Biden is not uniting this country with what is going on. He is making it worse than it ever was.
All right, we'll have to leave it at that. Marie, thanks for the call today.
Good. Thanks, Bill. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Reading and speak with Paul, who wants to talk about the abortion issue. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Yes. With the delivery of these abortion pills in the mail, you're introducing a new group of people that no one even considered, and that's the postal carriers, many of whom probably don't want anything to do with the slaughter, but are going to be forced to either deliver these pills or have their career destroyed. Where is their freedom to choose not to have anything to do with the slaughter, by being forced to deliver these pills.
Well, now, let's take that a step further. Let's say my postal person, a mail person, doesn't like the electric company, and so he or she has decided they're not going to deliver electric bills to anybody as a way to get even. Where do you stop?
Electric bills are legitimate. They're morally acceptable. The abortion pills are not. That's the taking a human life. There's no real reason why someone should be against the electric company. There are a lot of reasons to be against abortion and being forced to take part in this slaughter. There are a lot of reasons for not wanting to.
Well, now, how is the mail person going to know what's in the package they're delivering unless they open it?
It's probably labeled on the outside, the return address of who it is, and I don't know what type of packaging those pills are going to be delivered in, but even by looking at the return address, they'd probably be able to figure it out.
So you really want the post office to get that involved by censoring what they deliver and what they don't deliver?
I don't think they should allow these pills to be delivered in the mail.
Well, now that's a totally different thing, but by getting the post office involved here, by giving them authority to what they can and cannot deliver, now you're on dangerous ground there, Paul.
The dangerous ground is the kids being killed by these pills as well as other means. That's the dangerous grounds. And there's another issue to consider as well. What's to keep the postal carrier, even if the postal carrier doesn't care about delivering the pills, what's to keep the postal carrier from gossiping about who's getting them and possibly giving that information to people that the recipient doesn't want to know that they're having it, that they're having those pills? What's to keep the postal carrier from gossiping about it? Do they have to take an oath to keep everything confidence on what papers and what packages are being delivered to whom?
Well, there's a law called HIPAA that prevents anybody from dispensing or disseminating information about another person's medical history or medical information.
But are postal carriers covered by the HIPAA?
Everybody is covered by the HIPAA laws, including your employer.
Okay, well, I'll concede that. But still, like I said, you're taken away the religious freedom of the postal carriers who don't want to be part of the slaughter. That's another objection. That's another issue that no one even took into consideration. And I really hope that some court, even the Supreme Court, I really hope that the Supreme Court blocks the requirement that blocks the allowing of the pills being sent through the mail. I really hope that they don't allow the pills to be sent through the mail.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Paul, thanks for the call today. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye now. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with more of your calls on this Monday morning in just a bit when feedback continues here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The Voice of Berks and Beyond.
By the way, don't forget tomorrow during the 11 o'clock hour, from 11 to 11:30 actually, we'll be joined by Republican State Senator Tracy Pennycook, who represents Senate District 24, which covers parts of Berks and Montgomery counties. And also on the 12th of April, we'll have State Senator Judy Schwenk with us, a Democrat who represents Berks County. So that'll be during the 10 o'clock hour on the 12th of April, looking ahead there. So tomorrow it's State Senator Tracy Pennycook who will be with us. All right, with that said, let's go back to the phones right now. Matt in Shillington's been waiting to talk about the Eighth Amendment. Matt, good morning.
Hey,
welcome
good
to
morning.
Feedback.
Yeah, first, though, believe it or not, a quick shout out to the IRS. If you recall last year, you, IA, and I mentioned how quickly we got our refunds after filing our returns online. Well, last year my refund arrived in my bank account 1 week after I filed a return. Bill, this year the IRS accepted my return last Monday evening. Lo and behold, I found the refund in my bank account Friday evening. So it's down to 4 days for me. So a little bit of a shout out there. Also, you probably didn't know this, Bill. I am a certified AOC translator. So I think I can help a little bit with her. She was vague, and she did not really mention it. But regarding the comments about Trump coming up with the money for the appeal, her concern, and that of other Democrats and liberal pundits, is that if the bonding companies will not give Trump the money, who will? Putin? MBS? Mohammed bin Salman? It was mentioned on the Sunday talk shows that it would be legal to receive foreign monies to put up the bond, although the source would have to be disclosed. So in that regard, the question would be, how dangerous would it be for a presidential candidate to receive monies from a foreign power? So she did a poor job of explaining herself, but that's been the concern coming from that group, Bill. On the main topic, Irene did...
Well, before you go any further, Matt, before you go any farther,
sure.
The word has come out that he's selling Truth Social for several billion dollars, if my memory serves me right, and I'm wondering how quickly he could get hold of sale go through.
On that too. Here's what I've heard, and I don't think it's changed. If it does go public, it could be worth up to $3 billion for Trump. But I kept hearing, Bill, that it would not be money in his account for, I think it said 90 days or something, or maybe even
that
6 months.
Sense.
I don't know. But it would not be giving him the cash right away. But you're right about that, about the Truth Social thing. Hey, on the Eighth Amendment, it says, quote, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. So, you know, most of us, I hope you learned this in part of your government classes, most of us have been hearing about the famous Supreme Court decisions on cruel and unusual punishment. For example, Supreme Court has ruled that the death penalty is not cruel or unusual punishment. Also, the court did rule, though, that laws which impose the death penalty for a rape conviction in which the victim did not die, those laws, and Bill, they were found mostly, as you can imagine, in the southern states. Those laws were thrown out. They violate the Eighth Amendment. Regarding fines, the most recent court case I found was as recently as 1998. It's titled The United States versus Pajakajian, and it's about this, Bill. During a routine check of departing international flight passengers, customs officials discovered $357,000 on the person of Josep Bajakajian. In addition to charging him under U.S. code of attempting to leave the United States with an unreported sum in excess of $10,000, the government also sought forfeiture of the entire $357,144. Bill, the question before the court, very simple, is the forfeiture of that amount of cash, a sum in these offenses, is it in excess of $10,000? Does that violate the excessive fines clause? And indeed, Bill, I was surprised there was a vote of 5-4, but the court did rule in Bajakajian's favor. They said, you know, he brought over more than the $10,000. He violated the law, but to take that entire amount, for what his violation was would be a violation of the Eighth Amendment. So I would say, and I've heard this, I'm sure you've read a couple pieces on it, Bill, there is a legitimate argument based on like what you've said, you know, have there been any other precedents where someone's been charged this kind of fine like Trump? I don't know of any. So I think Irene makes a good case. We should follow it. Trump could, you know, win on appeal or at least have it reduced. But then the question is, it would have to go to the court first. So, Bill, I hope you did. You get, quickly, can I ask, did you get a refund or did you owe any money this year? How did your tax?
Oh, no, I did get a refund. And like you, it was within a week.
That is truly amazing. Thanks a lot, Bill. Have a good day.
All right, Matt, you too. Bye-bye now. Before we go back to the phones real quick, I just got this over from the New York Times. The UN Security Council has passed a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza for the month of Ramadan, breaking a five-month impasse. The United States, after vetoing earlier resolutions, abstained from voting on this. Israel's defense minister will meet several senior U.S. officials. They don't say when in this article. And that's real quick. They just wanted to get the story out there that the U.N. has passed, the U.N. Security Council, that is, has passed that resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire during Ramadan. And I'm sure ABC News will have more on that at the top of the hour. All right, let's go back to the phones. John in Wyomissing wants to take issue with me on a comment he made about nobody was hurt in the Trump case. John, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, Bill, good morning. And I'm not so much taking issue with you, but rather maybe taking your bait.
Okay, you're fair game.
Yeah, so I'll preface my comment by saying that, you know, had there been coordination of all of these, you know, felony indictments that the president is dealing with, I think some of them politically, you know, don't hold a lot of water, right? And I think this New York one is kind of there. And I can see the, you know, the argument that there weren't victims. But just because you asked the question, you know, can somebody call and say, hey, who do you think are the victims here? I think I would argue that anyone else that was trying to get credit from those banks, presumably, and again, I'm presuming here, presumably, you know, suffered because Donald Trump got preference by inflating his, you know, his worth and his assets and things like that. So not like your traditional victim, but I think that, you know, the system of credit is based on trust. And I believe that statute in New York doesn't require there to be a victim, just that there is, you know, sustained ongoing fraud. And I think if everybody operated in that way, our banking system would be chaos. So I guess the question is, does Donald Trump get to get the best banking terms because of his willingness to push the truth further than everybody else?
Well, do you think that even if he were honest with the value of his assets, that he wouldn't get preferential treatment from banks over somebody like you and me?
Certainly, yeah. But I think Donald Trump also has a reputation for maybe not being so good about paying people back, right? Which might be
But in this case, John, that's the point. That's what I'm trying to say here. In this case, not only were the banks who lent him money, not only did they get their money back, they got interest. So who was hurt here?
I'm saying the people that were also vying for that same credit from the bank and probably didn't get as good terms as Donald Trump because they were, you know, they didn't lie as much as him. I'm just taking
I'm not saying
that there's a major victim here, but
I'm saying that even if he didn't lie about the value of his assets, you don't think that the banks would have weighed more in favor of Donald Trump than they would someone like you and me?
No, but there's a limited amount of credit that the bank can give out. So whatever the bank decides to direct towards Trump and his fraudulent,
you're not answering my question. I'm saying you don't think that they would have lent him the money even if he was honest with the value of his assets,
like maybe on less beneficial terms. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So but he'd still get the money.
Trump gets, that impacts the other people vying for the same credit.
But he'd still get the money.
Sure, but maybe with less, like maybe at a higher interest rate or something like that, right?
But he'd still get the money that you're saying the others are not going to get.
No, I'm saying that they might not get terms as attractive as Trump's because Trump decided to apply for the credit fraudulently, right? So if they didn't.
All right, I got it. John, I got to go. I got to go, buddy.
I'm answering your question.
Yeah, good try.
Obviously, I think that January 6th is a much bigger deal than, you know, what's going on with...
I'm not talking about January 6th. I'm talking about the New York fraud case.
All right.
I got to go. All right. We'll be back in just a bit.
Weather and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And that's a wrap for hour number two of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square. Stay with us as I'll be joined by a couple of folks from the Council on Chemical Abuse. Today we're going to talk about teens and technology and how social media can lead to risky behavior for young people. That's coming up in the next hour, and your questions are invited. Stay with us. But right now, we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC and check in with Bob McCool for the latest in sports here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Thank you for making us part of your day today. Appreciate you being on your end of the radio or the internet, whatever the case might be.
The following is a paid Feature of the Day interview. The views expressed during Feature of the Day are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or sponsors of News Talk 830 WEEU.
Welcome back to Feedback as we kick off the third and final hour of this Monday edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky, and our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. And our text line for you to text your opinion to us now is 484-650-3373. And right now we're going to talk about teens and technology and how social media can lead to risky behavior for young people. And before I introduce my guest this morning, let me share with you a little background here. This is the age of social media. Engaging in various forms of social media is a routine activity that research has shown to benefit children and adolescents by enhancing communication, social connection, and even technical skills. Social media sites allow teens to accomplish online many of the tasks that are important to them offline, staying connected with friends and family, making new friends, sharing pictures, and exchanging ideas. However, in some instances, using social media can be a risk to adolescents more often than most adults realize. Most risks fall into the following categories: peer-to-peer, inappropriate content, lack of understanding of online privacy issues, and outside influences of third-party advertising groups, and the list goes on. And while we need technology to survive in a modern social world, a severe over-reliance on technology or an addiction to certain facets of its use can lead to consequences for teens, including isolation, extreme anxiety, depression, and problems with gambling. Here to talk about teens and technology and problem gambling, I'm joined by Mike Reese, who's with the Council on Chemical Abuse, Yvonne Stroman, who's also with COCA, and Sherry, a person with actual live experiences along these lines. And I welcome all three of you to the show today. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Appreciate that.
Good morning.
Morning.
So let's start with, Mike, let me ask you this. Tell us a little bit about the presentations you provide in schools about this topic of teens and technology.
Well, thank you, Bill. I've been in several local school districts, Exeter, Wilson, Kutztown, Brandywine, and why I'm missing it. And teens and technology, clearly technology is awesome. You know, there's no doubt about it. And I usually start off, because I'm a senior citizen, so I usually start off and say, well, when I was you in sixth grade, you know, 11 years old, my phone was on a table that had a cord with a rotary dial that I shared with mom, dad, and my baby sister. So a lot has grown. Mm-hmm. And since it is awesome, and often I ask how many people recognize my cell phone, everyone does. And then I ask how many young people have cell phones. And every single time, most 60, 70, 80% or better.
Oh, wow.
All right. And one gal at Kutztown, she said she had hers when she was 8 years old, had a cell phone.
Oh, my word.
Yes. And now, particularly after COVID, the elementary schools at the appropriate age, whatever appropriate is, they're letting the students take their Chromebooks home or their iPads, which mm-hmm. connect to the internet. And now that, like, not always eliminates snow days, but mostly eliminates snow days. So mm-hmm. that virtual programming is still in place. And this is spring break for many of the schools now. So, you know, the idea of particularly the gaming piece, you know, the whole idea that this is big business and it's designed for addiction. It's designed for people, young people particularly, to come back and repeat play. So when I talk about Fortnite, you know, some of these people just go crazy over some of these
tell
games.
Tell our listeners what Fortnite is.
Well, Fortnite is, you know, I haven't played it. So Fortnite is a game that you can actually play with other people, whether it's your buddies or random people, and you can level up. You know, you're killing people and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's interactive. It's action. You get points and scores, and you can level up. You know, to be like a master assassin, or like that's the short version of my understanding.
And these are games aimed at young people.
Aimed at young people. Now, of course, adults they join them too, also. But this is very popular with young people, preteen and teenagers. Very, very popular. Minecraft, Roblox. There's Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty. There's a whole list of these and designed for addiction. And so the loot box, which is in many of these games, is a, if you will, a box that has loot in. It sets the people, the young people up particularly, for occasional wins. So one time you go to the loot box, oh yeah, I got the loot box. Well, you may get a banana. But another time you go to loot box, you win the prize that you're looking for in this game.
Okay.
Right. And mm-hmm. so in Fortnite, there's these V-Bucks that you use real money to buy V-Bucks so that you can advance in this game. And maybe you get a skin that covers your weapon that's kind of really cool. And, you know, you don't get anything, but, you know, it looks kind of cool. And mm-hmm. for a 10-year-old or even 15-year-old, that's probably pretty cool. And, you know, you're with your buddies, and I got this cool-looking skin. So this loot box, it's kind of like the slot machine. You know, as adults, we know we're not going to win every time we pull the wheel, press the button on the slot machine. We know that.
Right.
Well, and it's very socially acceptable and repeat play. So we're setting our young people up for that idea of gambling. And so, you know, when I started with the Council of Chemical Abuse in 12, a lot of the research was done in Canada because of the British Empire. It's legal. Whereas in Pennsylvania, it's just started to be legal. And then in 2018, the Supreme Court said that sports betting could be legal state by state. And so now sports betting is very legal. So with the sports betting, you know, for adults, 21 and older, it's huge. It's just, so it's not like the Phillies won today. It's how many strikeouts, how many home runs, how many batters mm-hmm. were left on base,
right.
You know, what color the Gatorade is, mm-hmm. how long is the national anthem going to be sung. It's in play betting, so it's huge. So you start a 10-year-old with a gaming that has loot box, knowing full well they're not always going to win. It's a form of entertainment. It's socially acceptable. Now when they're, you know, legally 21, who knows what they'll do before,
right.
But legally 21, it's like, hey, look, let's go to our buddies, let's go to the casino, let's use our cell phone, and connect, develop an account with a credit card, and we're ready to go, we're ready to gamble.
And what did we say during the news break? What's one of the big news stories that's been out there all day long?
Now?
The
yeah.
Powerball okay. at over $1 billion mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even the news mm-hmm. is enticing mm-hmm. young people to gamble today. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that in one of your talks, there was an 8-year-old who raised their hand and said
yes.
they had a cell phone. What's the age range of your audience that you convey your message to?
Well, you know, I work part-time for the council.
Okay.
And so my assignment is usually pre-teen.
Gotcha.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12, somewhere there, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th grade, something like that. My full-time coworkers, they go a little older.
Okay.
But there's two presentations I've been assigned to. One is kids and technology, a little younger, 3rd, 4th, and then teens and technology, 5th, 6th. Kind of get them before they hit their teenagers.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
You know, got to plant the seed early because – you know, and some of the parents, they're all on board, too. You know, everyone's at the dinner table on their cell phone.
They are.
Right. So, you know, don't do what I do. Don't do what I do. Do what I say.
Right.
Well, you know, if your parents are on it and they're on – if they're gaming, too, well, the kids are thinking, well, that's cool. Dad does that. Mom does that. You know, my uncle does that. Everything's good.
Yeah, I have said this on the show quite a few times that when I go out to dinner, a lot of times I'll see a young family, a family of four – seated at a table, and they're all on their cell phones, not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And that, what kind of message is that sending that our society is today?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of a message, how is your message going across? How do you perceive, or how are you being perceived by your audience with the message that you're conveying?
Well, we use a PowerPoint, so I stick to the script.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I think that they get it. We don't embed it in that PowerPoint or a few little cute videos. There's also one from the Big Bang Theory with Penny on a video game in which she's, you know, kind of lost in the game and not going to work and disheveled and has Cheetos in her hair and, you know, and her neighbor comes over. And, you know, it's a silly video. But I think they really get the idea. Now, what they'll do with it, you know, who will know, but they definitely get the ideas like, you know what, this could be a problem. And, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, mom and dad are asleep, but, you know, little Johnny could be gaming and who in the bedroom under the covers, who knows? And
so true.
We have a slide like that. It's like, hey, can you relate to that? Oh, yeah, my cousin's like that or is that. Well,
wow.
So they can relate. This is definitely geared to them. I think the presentation is well done. And I really try to keep to the script.
Now, in addition to your presentations for young people, is there a similar presentation that's given to parents?
You know, there is, but I'm not part of that.
All right.
Yes.
Yvonne, can you address that at all or no?
So I know that Cairn Counseling, they work with families, particularly those who have identified as having a gambling use disorder.
Okay.
They provide outpatient services. In terms of community education to adults, I know that Mike also does gambling education awareness to individuals living in recovery houses because there is a nexus between a use disorder. And so what happens is if someone is in early recovery, they're looking to replace their once use of substances with something. And if they're not aware of gambling, there's just a synonymous road path between use of substances and gambling that sometimes people aren't even aware of it. And you think about casinos. I mean, casinos are designed to keep people gambling. And what way do they keep them by gambling is giving them alcohol. And many times it is gratis. It's free if they're continuing to stay in that place and throw the dice or, you know, reveal the cards or pull the slot machines. And so what happens is if that's not addressed in treatment, then you receive the message that maybe I can't drink, but I certainly can go and play cards or I certainly can go to the casinos. And so sometimes people don't make that association between the two. And unless that type of education is prioritized to deliver to individuals, they're going to do something. I mean, I was thinking about this morning on the way over, Bill, is that as people, we are conditioned to feel good. We don't like to feel bad. You
right,
know, you think about
right.
a headache. You have a headache, you take an aspirin for it. You have a stomach ache, you take Lactaid or something of that nature. So we don't have the wherewithal to understand that sometimes the uncomfortability in us is okay, that if we ride it through, we're going to get through the other side. But we see so many times on commercials, the lottery for an example, and they show lines during the newscast, right? They'll show
right.
lines of people are outside
mm-hmm.
around the block waiting. It could be raining. It could be the most severe storm. But people are saying they have the idea that they're going to win millions, and they even dream about it. Well, what are you going to do when you win all these monies? That's what they ask them. And so those things are enticing. And then you get even pulled. Where there's office pools, people are throwing in monies, and not having the wherewithal of what does that mean for me? Am I am I taking away from my daughter's lunch by gambling?
Right.
Am I taking away from food in the house overall, or even rent? What am I taking away from that I'm making available these monies to gamble? And those are sometimes opportunities to see what are the consequences. What are we seeing the consequences? And for young people, they really don't experience those consequences. They don't, because they're still under their parents' or caregivers' house. They're still having running water, electricity. Those consequences are immediate for them. And so they think, it's fun. It's fun. I can win something. It feels good. And what's the harm? But the harm is that there's not that awareness and education for young people as well as their parents and caregivers. Then there's the likelihood of more consequences evolving later on. I talked to you earlier about this is March Madness, right?
Right.
And it's huge. Gambling is huge among college students. And yet there isn't curriculum, unless it's part of the alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention. There isn't that conversation about gambling.
I guess my question was more, and I guess I didn't clarify it. My question was more along the lines of, are there any sessions that are available to help parents prevent their kids from using any online gambling sites that Coca Berks is involved with?
So there's kind of an overall, there are community education presentations for parents, but it really is kind of an overall prevention message about being aware of the consequences that are associated with using substances or gambling. So it's kind of an overall community awareness presentation that's available for adults and family members.
All right, we're going to take a break here, but before we do, let's get some contact information here for Coca Berks.
Absolutely. Our phone number is 610-376-8669, or you're welcome to visit our website at cocaberks.org.
My guests this morning are Yvonne Stroman and Mike Reese, both with the Council on Chemical Abuse, and Sherry, who's a person who has lived this experience, and we're going to talk with Sherry in just a little bit. That's when Feedback continues on this Monday morning. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback here on News Talk 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800. Or toll free, 888-401-0459. And our text line is 484-650-3373. If you'd like to send us your opinion or your question that way. My guests this morning are Mike Reese and Yvonne Stroman, both with the Council on Chemical Abuse, and Sherry, who is a person who has lived through the experience that we're talking about today. And we're talking about social media and the risks associated with social media and how that can lead to other problems down the road. And with that, let's turn to Sherry here. Sherry, share with us the experiences that you went through.
Okay, I'd love to. Thank you. Well, I've been a gambler for a long, long time. Started out very innocently. I believe I actually started out scratching lottery tickets. I was not a child gambler, so scratching lottery tickets and then going to casinos in Atlantic City, a fun thing to do once or twice a year. But then a casino moved in pretty close to where we were living, and that started my compulsive gambling. And compulsive gambling is, it's a horrible situation. I became quite a liar, which is a lot of people do. Not everyone, but a lot of people do. Lying comes so easy for us. I also developed a narcissistic personality. Everything was centered around me and my gambling. For me, I lied and kept most of that information from my family. And then So that was like 16 years ago. I became a compulsive gambler, and then finally it came to a head. My husband, like I said, my husband had no idea how deep I was in, and I did the finances, so that was scary too.
Mm-hmm.
One day we came home. My husband had had surgery that day and that week, and we brought him home that day, and we drove up to the house, and there were sheriff and police at my home, on my back porch, on my front porch. Luckily, we got there when we did, because they were just ready to lock the house out for. We were given 20 minutes then to go in and get what we could.
Oh my!
And we did. Then later on in the week, I believe it was about a week later, we were allowed in for the weekend, not to stay, but for the daytime, we were allowed in to get things out of the house. Anyway, that whole thing was just horrible. But we were lucky enough. We had loving family members, and they allowed us to stay with them for a while. 3 months later, we moved into the area down here. Small apartment. The house was sold. It was taken from us, and the bank sold it. We had had that house for 35 years.
Oh,
and
my.
And that is a that talks about how gambling does not just affect the gambler or even just, you know, the spouse or the children. It affected all of them terribly, but even my grandchildren, God love them. This house was where they came, and we had just redone it. There was a nice room upstairs for them, and it hit pretty hard. And the problem is, we didn't know that about them, that it had hit hard, and until later. So, but anyway. Losing the house was a big thing. However, I have to say, what I lost personally, my self-respect, even who I was, I didn't know this person that I was trying to be or that I had become. I didn't know me. My children didn't know who I was, and my husband, well, we're still together. We celebrated 51 years of marriage.
Oh, my.
So he stood by me and still does. And my children, they're great. We have a great relationship now, my
mm-hmm.
children and I. But so then, we're down here in the area, and then COVID hits. Now, for me, it's the era of online gambling. I don't have to have a casino.
Mm-hmm.
I was up all hours of the night, not sleeping. I was gambling.
This was after the experience with your home being taken?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Compulsive gamblers, they have to pretty much hit rock bottom. There are some people that can find a program, can find a meeting with Gamblers Anonymous before they hit rock bottom. I hope everyone listens to that and does it. Unfortunately, I did not. I gambled online and started using my husband's bank account. And finally, my children said, they found out, and they said, enough. This is enough now. And it was a rough situation between me and my children, and my husband and my children. And the reason for that is because he was trying to support me all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all in a turmoil, just a terrible turmoil. And but my children took over the finances. And that's when I found Gamblers Anonymous. Truly found. I had been going before, but then I fell off the wagon, so to speak. And but this time, when my children stepped in like they did, both of them together, I found Gamblers Anonymous, and that's a story that I love to tell constantly. I don't mind telling my personal story.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I have to do to be honest. Mm-hmm. No more lies. That's the one thing. No more lies. Mm-hmm. Everything has to come out to your spouse, at least. And mine came out to my spouse and my children. But
speaking of your spouse, let me stop you there for a minute.
Sure.
When did he first learn about your problem? Did he learn about it when the sheriff's office had deputies there at the house, or did he know before that?
He learned about it to the full extent. Well, mostly to the fullest extent at that point. He knew that I gambled a little bit.
Prior to that, he knew. Mm-hmm.
The fact is, I was lucky, but you're not really lucky when you start gambling and you win. It just reinforces, and you lose it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, but gamblers, compulsive gamblers, chase the bet. They chase the money. It becomes not even about the money anymore. It becomes about the rush. Mm-hmm. And then there is the medical side of it, the rush, and it's a disease, and it's just terrible. And
now you say that your husband has been by your side all through this.
He has.
What was his initial reaction when he realized the extent of the problem?
Okay, like I said, we had fabulous, loving people that left us stay with them. So he and I were together there, but we didn't know at that point whether we were going to stay together, whether we were going to be able to.
Oh, my. You mean financially stay together?
Financially, because of all the lies that I told. He couldn't trust me to, at that point, step 1 foot away from where he could see me. I mean, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, we didn't know. And even when we moved down here and started over again, he wasn't happy in the beginning. We had this huge house. And now we're living in a very small apartment. So he wasn't happy. It was just not his vision of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess we just kind of grew back together. And once I was really into the Gamblers Anonymous program, I did what was suggested of me. I did what they told me to do. And now I understand the program, and this is where I need to be. So I started being more honest with him about everything. And he started to trust me little by little. There's still some non-trust there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take a long time. And I may never get all of that back, all of that trust, but we're good.
We've talked on this program about addiction to alcohol and addiction to drugs. And the bottom line is, what we've said in whenever we've had those discussions, is that addiction is with you for life, that it's a constant battle. Is it the same thing with gambling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a friend tell me one time that that little gambler, he's on that devil, he's on your shoulder. He's there all the time, and you have to keep pushing him off, doing something to get him off, to keep him off, but it can come back. But we have people in the program in Gamblers Anonymous, and they've been there since 1979. I mean, just fabulous. And they keep coming back because they know. Unfortunately, we need the new people. We need everyone else around us there to help us, and they need us. So if he leaves the program, and he tells all the new people, if he leaves the program, he will go back to the bed. Maybe not next week, maybe not next month or next year, but he knows right now he'll go back to the bed. I know the same thing. I am that programmed for gambling. I actually gambled for about 35, maybe 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, I want to talk to you. We're going to take another break here.
Okay.
And when we come back, I want to talk with you about what your advice is for other people out there listening today who are either gamblers themselves and know they have a problem, or they don't know they have a problem, and ways you can help them discover that they do, as well as loved ones who feel that someone in their home is suffering from a gambling addiction, and what advice you have for them. Before we go any farther, Sherry, did you want to share with the audience your email address?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
If there's anyone out there that feels the need to speak to someone, or to find out about the different meeting places, anything that you need, you can use my email. It's NANASHER 56 at AOL.com. And I know that ages me, but what can I say?
Repeat that again.
Sure. NANASHER 56 at AOL.com.
And, contact information for Coker Burks, Yvonne?
Yes. The Council on Chemical Abuse is 610-376-8669, or visit our website at cokaburks.org.
And we'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to feedback. You know, during the commercial break, we were saying that an addiction to gambling is a disease. And hearing you talk, it reminds me of those of us who have gone through a situation where a loved one went through Alzheimer's. It's not just a disease. Alzheimer's itself is not just a disease that affects the loved one, it affects the entire family. And we're talking about something that's very similar here with an addiction to gambling. Sherry, a powerful message, and I applaud you for the strength that you had in sharing that on air today. I'm sure that was not an easy thing to do.
Thank you. It wasn't, but I've become more accustomed to telling my story. So,
well, share with us. Give us some advice for people out there listening who say, you know, I've got a loved one who I think has a gambling problem. or someone who is gambling and they're seeing that it's getting out of control. What are your words of advice for those situations in dealing with this?
Okay. My words of advice are that if you need to go to a meeting. Now, you can go on. I don't know where everyone is calling in from or listening to from. You can go on gamblersanonymous.org, simple as that, and put in a little bit of information, what your zip code is, and they will find you a meeting that fits you. The first time you're there, we're going to do the 20 questions. And that will pretty much tell you where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
The 20 questions ends with a question about suicide. And we have had that question answered, yes. So, it asks a lot of different things about time lost at work and all of that. And if you just answer them yes or no and honestly, the first step is to walk into that room. Doing the 20 questions is the second step. Most compulsive gamblers will answer yes to 7 questions. Since I've been there, which is, I'm coming up on almost 2 years clean, I haven't heard anyone answer anything less than 10, I believe. And so then you listen to what we tell you. We go through, when you're there the first time, we go through what I just did here on the radio, the gambling experience for me. And when you do that, you will hear bits and pieces of your gambling experience in my gambling experience. When you decide it's time to tell your story, and you don't have to do it right away, just come to the meeting, hear us, and hear what we have to recommend to you. Once you are ready to speak, to tell us your story, when you've done that, and go ahead and cry. Everyone cries, man, woman, teenager. They all cry, and it gets everything out in the open. And we have people tell us that first night when they talk, there are people sitting across the table from them, smiling and shaking their head in understanding what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time that these people don't feel threatened or scared, because they know that we know what they're going through. We've been there, every one of us. So that's what I would recommend, the first step for someone who, a family member who thinks someone else in the family has a gambling problem. That might be a little harder, but you can ask, you can tell the person that you will come along with them. Now our programs, the ones here in the Reading area, are closed, but that doesn't mean that you can't bring someone the first or the second time.
All right, we're running out of time here, and with just, I have just 1 minute left. Share with us what are the things you're doing to see to it that you don't get that gambling itch?
I'm keeping busy. I am very busy. When I told you that I kind of slipped backwards once. When I went back, and I didn't lose any time, but I went back, I got a sponsor. I go to 3 meetings a week. I took the time, and I'm very proud of this, I took the time and got my high school GED at the age of 67.
God bless you. That's wonderful.
You just keep busy. Now I am facilitating a program at the RISE Center, a new program that we needed because Berks County only had one. Now we have two.
All right. Share real quick, as you did before. Share with the folks your email address.
Right. My email address is nanasher56@aol.com.
And Coca Berks?
Coca Berks is 610-376-8669, and our website is cocaberks.org. And I'm wondering if Mike could just kind of give, there's a gambling hotline, if you can quickly give that, Mike.
Yes, 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, say that one more time.
1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, I want to thank Mike Reese, Sherry, and Yvonne Stroman for being my guest today. Powerful program. Thank you so much for being with
us
today.
Thank you,
Bill.
Thank you
for having me.
And we'll be back with the final seconds of feedback in just a bit. Stay with us. That'll do it for the Monday edition of Feedback. I want to thank everybody who called in, texted in, wrote in, however you did it. Either way, I thank you for sharing your opinion on the topics of the day. You folks are the stars of the show. We'll do it again tomorrow. I want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
And we'll do it again tomorrow for sure. Right now, we're going to break for news with Radio PA and ABC. And our own Bob McCool has a check on sports for you to round out the top of the hour. Then it's a whole afternoon of talk radio, starting with Dan Bongino from noon to 3, followed by The Ramsey Show from 3 to 6. So keep it here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.